look at who is profiting on hate and gender binary.
Mm-hmm.
Look at who is profiting on racism. Look at who is profiting on sexism. Now, stop listening to those people. Take off what they put on you.
Take off what they put on you. That is a word. You know what, Carl? Like, people have to have an entry point.
Sure.
And that phrase is a great entry point. Like, take off what they put on you. Because just because somebody put it on you doesn't mean it has to stay.
Welcome to Trade Secrets, an HBO Max podcast where you get to listen in on an intimate and unexpected conversation between two great storytellers. Trade Secrets brings together actors, writers, directors, and other creative pros to discuss their work, process, and passions. And we also make room for the surprises that come from chatting about everyday human experiences, too. Even though they met for the first time to record this episode, today's conversation feels like two old friends catching up. We have Lauren Ashley Smith, head writer and co-executive producer of HBO's A Black Lady Sketch Show, and actor Carl Clemens Hopkins, who plays Marcus, opposite Jean Smart in the HBO Max comedy Hacks. Both are nominated for Emmys this year. In this chat, Lauren and Carl cover growing up in the Black church, the Chicago theater scene, where Carl performed in Hamilton, and making space for imperfection and joy. There is so much laughter and truth-telling in this conversation, so enjoy!
What's up, Lauren? How are you?
Hi, Carl. I'm good. How are you? I am truly ecstatic to meet you.
Same.
And I'll try to dial it back so that I don't seem chaotic, but I'm so thrilled.
I'm just going to be smiling this entire time.
I want to talk first about something that I really identify with, which is that you grew up in a super Christian family.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I tell people that, like, if I never go to church ever again, I will still be in the black from church on Sunday, evening service, mm-hmm. Bible study on Wednesday, choir mm-hmm. rehearsal on Tuesday, other mm-hmm. choir rehearsal on Thursday.
Auxiliary board on Friday, vacation Bible school in the summer, 8 days a week.
8 days a week.
Just holiness and convocation.
So tell me about, you know, your day-to-day as a kid and how, if anything, that upbringing kind of brought you to this understanding of yourself as an artist.
I'm going to first say that I'm grateful for good friends, good love, and therapy so that I can address these things without as much of the hurt that mm-hmm. sometimes is attached with it. But the day-to-day was, well, every morning you have to read the Proverbs according to the date.
Really?
And then you'd have to write a brief summary about it, talk about it, and then, you know, get dressed and get ready for the bus. My mom was in Sunday school ministry. My father was in men's ministry. I was in everybody's choir and everybody's everything. But what I will say that I'm grateful for is if you have to be in the King James Bible every day, you at least build your language art skills. If we went to my mother's grandmother's church, where, you know, it's Old Baptist, Slow Baptist, Old Ship of Zion at the Temple of a Glacier, doilies, no pants for the women.
Yep, mothers of the church. Yep.
No, mothers mm-hmm. of the church.
Mm-hmm. The Bibles are hanging by a thread. Thick, stuffed with programs,
yes.
And the paper is
ribbons.
See-through. Yes.
26 different funeral programs at mm-hmm. any given chapter of any given book. Between that and, like, military upbringing, it built a sense of discipline.
Mm.
It's a lot to ask of a child to mm-hmm. be that devoted to anything, especially when I just want to, like, go climb trees and twirl around like a fairy. But it definitely gave me a sense of a world, a community.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of N.K. Jemisin, mm-hmm. the premier science fiction writer. And she's, in my opinion, like a master at world creation. And there's something about the inner workings, outer workings, channels and avenues that is many versions of the Black church, that is just a completely different world. It's a completely different universe. And for me, it was, I needed to bend my imagination past that world to explore other ones.
Totally. I heard that you spent most of the quarantine time in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I imagine that being in Hamilton in Chicago, like, that was a place of great success and
yeah.
excitement and hard work for you. What do you think it is about that city that made it a place where you could really, like, lean into your craft as an artist?
What I loved most about Chicago is that I... it was the first time I felt that I could be my most authentic self. Mm. There's a lot of people from the South, people from other places in the Midwest who are here. There is an insanely dynamic music scene here. There is an insanely dynamic theater scene here. There's an insanely dynamic queer community here. Also, not for nothing, I'm 6'4", and there's plenty of people my size and bigger, which kind of just made me feel better. And coming from New York, where I felt like I couldn't take space or I couldn't, like, fit in, really, just because sometimes it's just a physically compressing place. You know, there's a lot of people, there's small living conditions, there's a lot of, you spend a lot of time being just uncomfortable. And for me, Chicago, I was able to at least kind of, you know, stand up straight and look around and see people. It also didn't hurt to have something really good on your resume while.
Right.
Being here. I mean, it's helpful. It's helpful. And that show, I feel like it was my grad school. Like, I definitely had to up my work ethic and solidify a work ethic because I saw a lot of people who came in, you know, real cute and weren't trying to work. Mm-hmm. And they went out real uncute. That's throughout in the industry, you know, especially in this age of the internet. People will, if they're not careful, they'll forget that this is a job, this is a craft, this is something you can't just, I mean, parties are great and celebrations are wonderful, but a deadline is a deadline is a deadline.
Amen.
Our director used to say that Thursday night doesn't give a shit about Tuesday night show.
Period.
It was a very Debbie Allen Fame-like moment. Like, oh, you want this?
Yeah.
This is where you're going to start paying for it and sweat. And I grew to love it, but it was very, and not that I was thinking that it was going to be lighter than that, but, you know, and I'm sure you experienced, you don't know what it is to be at the level you're at until you're there.
Exactly.
You know, until it's negative 20 degrees, 16 inches of snow on the ground, and a 7:30 mm-hmm. half hour call time that you need to make.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Get there. Ready. So I was grateful for that. I learned so much from it, and I'm forever grateful to, you know, like Tommy Kail, Michael Balderrama, and Stephanie Clemens. Like, they'll get you together.
Yes. You're now someone that's like, people know who you are. You're on a hit show. You have an Emmy nomination. You were in the hottest musical of our modern time, pretty much. When you had your last day as a bartender, did you know it was your last day as a bartender?
Ooh, not at all. Listen, that resume is still in my book bag for any given point in time when anything decides to pop off. I did not know it was my last day. What I knew was, I knew that a new minimum was set.
Mm.
Bartending in New York, sometimes it's a double-edged sword because, A, you have shelter, food, and clothing, so thank God. But also, you know, you can't just pop out of town for 8 weeks for,
right.
You know, 2 cents in a milkshake. You actually have to make a living now. And so what I did like about it was that, okay, now you're doing this. So if you're going to go back to this, which you very well can do, there's nothing wrong with it. Know that it would, let it be because you have to, not because you didn't work hard enough to keep yourself out of it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I told somebody the other day, I'm very new to, you know, hope and optimism and, you know, manifestation and whatnot. I'm very much a where's that other shoe? And so I was very, very aware of the shift.
Do you, as someone who is so high achieving, like, and you're very laid back about, like, your accomplishments, you're like, if I had been in Hamilton and also was Emmy nominated for Hacks of all projects, you wouldn't be able to tell me shit.
I think there was a moment, maybe, well, this was years ago, me and my buddies talk about this because we had just got our equity card. And that was the moment. That was my first experience of, okay, nobody tell me nothing. Mm. I was, what, 22, making hundreds of dollars a week for the first time in my life. I could go to any pub and, like, shots on me. The shots are $3. Shots on me. That was my big, like, whatever. And I was in conversation with somebody. And it started to get a little, you know, a little pompous, a little whatever. And a bird shit on my head. And I was like, ah. All right.
There we go. Back to earth we go.
Oh, something good happened. Oh, such. All right. Well, shut up about it for a bird shit on your head. Because that might happen.
Honestly, that reminds me of something. This is something I definitely need to unpack with a therapist. But probably 10 years ago, I was in a restaurant in New York called Burgers and Cupcakes, like just like a kind of diner-y type place. They serve burgers and cupcakes.
Oh, I can see it. I can see it.
And there was this young lady with a group of friends, and she was so happy. Like, she was so joyous. She was having the time of her life with her friends. And as she was bouncing out the door with her friends, her jacket that was tied around her waist slipped off of her body, and she didn't notice, and it just was on the ground, and she walked away from the jacket. And I was like, seeing that visual before, I was like, Miss, you dropped your jacket. I was like, I don't want to ever get too happy and unconcerned and unbothered that I unknowingly lose my jacket, which is a crazy thing to think because you can't live your life that way. That's what happens when you get too carefree.
Right? How dare you? Keep your head down.
Keep your wits about you.
That foreboding joy thing, that's real. But I think it's important to take those moments, you know, with your best people around you. I'm a big fan of, you know, finding a pool and screaming underwater.
Wow.
That's always fun. Getting out somehow. What's sad is you were telling that story, and I thought you were going to be like, she walked out and they got hit by a bus. I'd be like, no. See what happens?
Oh, man.
Being all joyful, don't let this internet get you twisted.
Are you someone that leave space for yourself to not be good at things? Or are you like, I'm going to try it, I'm not good at it, and then walk away?
I more than leave space for it. It's to the point where I will go, sometimes I'll just enter with the mindset of, you know, I'm just going to fuck this up one time.
Love that.
I'm going to fuck this up one time only. That actually was most of my experience with hacks.
Really?
Because it was, I didn't know these people. It's a very different type of show. I'm a very different type of person. Because also, it's a trust thing, you know? It's like, oh, you've been in your apartment in Chicago for 8 months. Come be open and vulnerable and enjoy the creative process with these white people you've never seen before with their faces half covered. I didn't initially feel safe with that. So I think the way that I had to overcome it was like, okay, let me just go be wrong. Let me just go, somebody will tell you. I don't mind hitting the boundaries. I don't mind hitting the wall. I don't mind, especially if, you know, we got takes and it's not celluloid. Like,
let's, we got room on the card. Let's go for it.
For me, I know that there's a way that someone wants something to be done. There's a way that it probably shouldn't be done. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be the way I do it.
Yes.
And the way I do it, if you chose me for something, that means you think that my way is closer to what you want done. Mm. But it still won't be, you know, if you want it exactly that way, then you do it.
Right.
So I'm very much of the Miss Frizzle, take chances, make mistakes, get messy mindset. Because without that, I don't think there's any space for, there's no room for the Holy Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
There's no room for creative expression and growth. I'm a big proponent of at least trying it wrong the first time.
I truly adore you. Anyone who can drop a Miss Frizzle reference after talking about Vacation Bible School is like truly my kind of person. So bless
it's truly
you.
A repressed childhood.
Uh-huh.
At PBS and TBN, that's about it.
I think it's revolutionary as a person in a queer Black body, and I speak from my experience, to feel like you have the space in the world to be like, it's not going to be perfect, and I do have the opportunity and latitude to make mistakes.
Yeah, it's big. It's big to the point that I have to, like, take 5 minutes for myself before. Like, I can talk about it now, rattle off, like, yeah, I make mistakes all the time. But, you know, walking in, you know, I'm screaming inside.
Right.
But, but I can't scream outside because I won't get shot. So it's a real thing. And it's a real thing, especially given, like, similar upbringings that we had. And it's a real thing given the fact that, especially Black and queer bodies, nothing about the society we live in says, oh, you have chances.
Correct.
You have room to fall and we'll still love you. You can make an awful something and we'll still love you and give you chances to do it again. That's just not, you know, that's not the privilege that we came up in. So at the end of the day, what you have to be as a human and what humans are is flawed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't lean into that part of your humanity, then you're denying yourself and you can't live your life denying yourself.
Exactly. I want to speak about Barry Jenkins' Moonlight.
Oh my God.
That film changed my life. That changed my life, that movie.
Same.
I was watching it on my laptop and I finished the movie and I was like absolutely emotionally scooped out. And I just dragged it from the end of the timeline back to the beginning and rewatched it immediately.
Because
it was that impactful. And I saw that you had written in your journal that, like, I know there will never be another Moonlight, but if there's another opportunity like this, I want to be ready. And so tell me about, just tell me what that film meant to you. I want to know what it felt like for you to see that for the first time?
I feel like for me, it was take the setting of his home as a kid, drive up a mile, maybe two. And if you picked those 2 miles up, took them out of Miami and put them in Lithonia, Georgia, I was like, oh, shit, this is that dude down the street. This is me over here. I was seeing a film representation of people that I knew, mm-hmm. places that I knew, high schools that I recognized, bullies that I had. And on top of that, it was so beautiful. I had never seen us captured so beautiful. Even these not so beautiful settings, yeah. not so beautiful situations. I've seen and experienced so many beautiful queer individuals having to repress themselves under the mantle of patriarchy or the myth of masculinity or all this other stuff. And I've seen what it does to these souls. It's almost like they're consuming themselves from the inside because they have so much fear and shame and pain and heartache. You know that thing, you know, you can't see what you can't be?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that Black queer storytelling existed like that. I didn't know that stories about some of these neighborhoods that we came up in could be viewed that way or could be the setting of such beautiful story craft. Like, it was just incredible. It was so affirming.
100%. Yes. You know, when you're a young queer Black person, so much of your anguish comes from the conversations you have with yourself, those inner moments.
Exactly. Ooh, child.
Like, it's almost not even about always what other people say or what other people Mm-mm. do.
They're just confirming.
It's about that coming out to yourself turmoil. And I thought the movie captured so many of those private moments so perfectly that I saw myself for the first time in a way that I'd never seen myself.
It is that thing. It's the inner turmoil that the outer just confirms or affirms sometimes in the worst mm-hmm. way. You know, it's like, oops, see, I told you were nothing. You know, you were nothing because she treated you like nothing. You know, I told you you were messed up. You know why you messed up? If you weren't messed up, they wouldn't be so mean to you. You know, it's stuff like that.
Okay, I want to know about your op-ed in The Hollywood Reporter about embracing they-them pronouns. And you said that it was less about me putting a new label on myself and more about taking unnecessary labels off, which is what I wish people yeah. understood more about yeah, they-them pronouns. So tell me what led you to want to write that op-ed at this time, like, and sort of your process for coming to that.
I will say it was a guided interview. Like, there were questions that I was answering. And in the midst of that, took the opportunity to invite people on a bit of the journey that I had taken for myself with the hope that they would understand, if anything, what they could do for themselves, mm-hmm. but also to demystify this. Sometimes I'll encounter people who are like, I couldn't possibly understand. This is beyond the scope of whatever. I'm like,
it's really not.
I think it's a lot easier for Black people to believe that everything you've been told was a lie, because a lot of what we've been told is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
So, for me, I have not found a single instance of racism without sexism. I've not found a single instance of hate without hate.
Mm-hmm.
it's all hate.
Connected.
Look at who is profiting on hate and gender binary.
Mm-hmm.
Look at who is profiting on racism. Look at who is profiting on sexism. Now, stop listening to those people. Take off what they put on you.
Take off what they put on you. That is a word. You know what, Carl? Like, people have to have an entry point.
Sure.
And that phrase is a great entry point. Like, take off what they put on you. Because just because somebody put it on you doesn't mean it has to stay.
No, just because they put it on you, just because they surrounded you with it, just because you might be comfortable with it.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's for you. You can put all this other stuff on, but it doesn't mean that you're that person.
Right.
So if anything, I hope it was an entry point for people coming out of a very, you know, introspective time to realize that, you know, not only are these hard and fast rules that we've been taught false, but there's a whole world, there's a whole spectrum. There are more than two genders, just like there's more than two races,
yes.
just like there's more than one way to be any of those things. And so you have to decide, you know, do you want to continue that trajectory? Do you want to continue that cycle? Or do you want to try to get as free as you can for as long as you can in the time that you have? And I chose the latter.
Love that. Yours was a performance that was like, okay, now we're at a new level. We're operating in a new category of performance and character and complexity. And it was just such a delight to watch. So congratulations on your Emmy nomination and your well-deserved accolades for the performance.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm very grateful that we had such a in-depth character to explore.
I found out I was nominated for these two Emmys this season when I was in a basement with sewage. Like, it wasn't a glamorous moment. I was dealing with trash.
I mean, still congratulations.
But what was that moment like for you? Like, how did you find out? What was your mental process after?
So, real quick, last year, my summer allergies did not get their time to shine. So this year, it was Freaknik 98. Like, they were out. They were on. So I was in a deep Benadryl sleep. And my partner woke me up, was like, listen, hey, check your phone. And I looked at my phone and it had more notifications than I thought my phone could have. First, I thought somebody died. And then I don't know why, for a second, I'm like, oh, shit, did I die?
No!
Again, deep Benadryl sleep. So he's like, you're nominated for an Emmy. And I'm like, for what? And he was like, for Hacks. I'm like, why?
No, you didn't.
I was just supposed to come in, do my job, go home. Don't get Gene sick. Don't step on nobody's toes. Like, just get in, get out. You know, do your craft, do your work. And my scripts are marked up like fuck, but it was still like, I thought that I was just doing a job on a television program. And it didn't hit for like a few days. Also, like, my birthday was like a week after. Mm-hmm. And so I thought everybody was just early.
And you're like, wait, what day is it?
Y'all don't love me at all. As it sunk in, it was really dope. And like 2 days later, because my agents were like, oh, we're so excited. How do you feel? And I'm like, I feel great. Is it on the resume? Word. Good.
Let's update the records ASAP.
Let's make sure we're sending me out for these things, you know, because currently unemployed. Again, I was never one to put, you know, my hope in like trophies or anything, but I do recognize the visibility benefits from it in the sense that somebody's probably going to hear me talking about my experience and hopefully mm-hmm. they will get some hope from that. Yep. Hopefully they will see some identification in that. So I'm honored and humbled for the opportunity to be that person. I'm grateful for my team so I can actually like manage being that person. I'm still very much the t-shirt and basketball shorts person that I am, which I think is a great balance.
Love that.
Because I feel like some people are expecting me to become a different person, and they will be very disappointed. So, yeah. How about you? I mean, other than the sewage, what was that like?
It was very exciting. It was complex because my dad died about a month ago.
My condolences.
And so it was the first kind of big moment.
Yeah.
In those moments of great joy, especially when it was so fresh, it definitely just brought a lot of emotions forward because I was FaceTime with my mom and my sisters and my wife, and I felt this phantom feeling like there's someone else I should talk to.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah.
And so it was so complex, and I took it all in, and I wasn't expecting it to feel so complex, but I just was so proud because of, you know, as you know, it's like we work so hard on these things, and you don't do it for the accolades or recognition or pat on the back. You do it because you love it and because you feel called to do it. But it is really affirming, especially to do something like the work, like a Black Lady Sketch Show, which is so born of our hearts as Black women, for people to say, you did that from your heart and we appreciate it. It's so just affirming. And so I was really excited in a basement with sewage. Carl, I cannot thank you enough for having this conversation with me. It has been a true joy. I have learned a lot. My heart has become fuller, and I am just so thrilled for you and at this pivotal, amazing moment you are at in your career and in your life in general. So I thank you.
Thank you. This has been overwhelmingly incredible. Lauren, congratulations to you and everybody at A Black Lady Sketch Show. It's my favorite show. If you're not watching it, what are you doing with your eyes?
Thanks for listening to Trade Secrets. You can stream all of A Black Lady Sketch Show and Hacks right now on HBO Max. Each episode of the Trade Secrets podcast features a different pair of creative pros from some of the most talked about content on HBO Max. And the conversations drop on a surprise schedule. So if you haven't already, definitely make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. We have some amazing duos coming up that you don't want to miss. So stay tuned. Trade Secrets is a production of HBO Max and Pineapple Street Studios. Beyondria July produces the show. Brianna Garrett is our associate producer. Our editor is Darby Maloney. Hannes Brown is our engineer. Gabrielle Lewis is our senior managing producer. Our executive producers are Barry Finkel, Jenna Weiss-Berman, and Max Linsky. To support the show, please follow, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. And tell a friend.